Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Thursday, May 7th, 2015, episode 11.02, the NFL Draft Recap Show. The dust has settled from the fallout of the 2015 NFL Draft, and it's time to talk about some of the big picks, the head scratchers, winners, and losers during the three-day NFL event. As you know, I am not a big fan of passing out grades. I hate that. I don't think it's fun because you don't really know what these players are going to do. But Richard Graves of Sky Sports News will join me a little bit later on in the show to discuss what you might have missed during the draft. Also, Ted Wells has released his report, people, and it is a pretty damning report indeed. The question is, will Tom Brady crash and burn because of it? Richard will weigh in, and I will weigh in and give you my thoughts in that as well. So it's time to chomp it in.
Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves.
All right, people, before we get Richard on the phone and start talking about the draft, want to say a couple things about the show. The draft has started. Some camps have opened up for teams, so you will start seeing the show on a more regular basis. All of you who played fantasy football last year and won your leagues, please check your emails as emails have gone out as to how to claim your prize for winning your league. Also, there's a new app out there. I'm sure many of you have heard of it. It's called Periscope. It allows you to live stream video. And I am going to be, in the near future, giving you a closer look inside the Rave Cave as I am going to be streaming live video of recording of this podcast so you can see where I do it, how the Rave Cave looks. For those of you who never saw any of our videos, our five-minute football fix and stuff like that. So that's going to be gone. If you are not on Periscope, download the app. Once again, it's Periscope, and you can follow the show at NFL R&R. That's at NFL R&R for upcoming video streams of Inside the Rave Cave. And I'm also going to be doing it while I'm on location, training camps, games, stuff like that. Get you fans a little bit closer look at what happens behind the scenes at those NFL events. Now, before we talk about the draft, let's talk about some NFL news. Buffalo Bills running back LeSean McCoy played the race card as part of the reason why he was let go in Philly. If you haven't heard it, LeSean McCoy basically said, "I feel like I always respected him as a coach. I think that the way he runs his team, he wants the full control. You see how fast he got rid of all the good players, especially all the good black players. He got rid of them the fastest. That's the truth. There's a reason." And McCoy was basically doing an interview. He said, "It's hard to explain with him. But there's a reason he got rid of all the big black players," he continued, "the good ones," just like that. You know what? I heard this, and I can kind of see why he said it. But to me, after further evaluation, LeSean, give it up, man. It's starting to sound like sour grapes. He let you go. He didn't think you were a fit for his football team. And that's it. Look, I don't love Chip Kelly. I liked him as a college coach. I sure as heck don't like him now. He's head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. But to say that he got rid of black players and to kind of insinuate that he's racist, that's not right. Okay, this guy also, in case you forget, brought in Darren Sproles. Last time I checked, he was colored. He brought in, from the Dallas Cowboys, DeMarco Murray. Yep, I'm pretty sure he's a black guy. And he got rid of Nick Foles, the quarterback. And last time I checked, and I'll check again real quick, hold on. Yeah, Nick Foles is not black. He was a white guy. So I'm not sure exactly what McCoy was talking about. Look, Chip, if you go all the way back to his collegiate days, you guys remember LeGarrette Blount? The only reason LeGarrette Blount is running footballs in the National Football League today is because of Chip Kelly. A racist would not help an African-American get onto the biggest stage for his sport. Okay? LeGarrette Blount punched a guy in college. It was just uncalled for. It was unseen. It was a cheap shot, low blow, whatever you want to call it. And most coaches would have gotten rid of LeGarrette Blount. Chip Kelly stood by him, kept him on the team. Didn't, you know, he got disciplined, of course. He was suspended for a lot of games. But he didn't just get cut off the team and thrown away. He stuck with him. He said some good things to some NFL coaches. And that's why LeGarrette Blount got a football job in the National Football League. It was because of Chip Kelly. Kelly helped him out. So I hate coming in defense of head coaches, especially when they coach the Philadelphia Eagles. But I'm going to defend Kelly a little bit on this side. I know, I understand he still has Riley Cooper on his team, and Cooper said some pretty damning things. But you can't – just because somebody talks to somebody or coaches somebody or has somebody around, you can't insinuate that everybody is like Riley Cooper and thinks like Riley Cooper. So it's hard for me, a man of color, who has witnessed racism firsthand. Okay, I'm a colored guy who grew up in the state of Texas. It doesn't get worse than that. I would like to live in a world, and I'm starting to lose faith that world is never going to happen, but I would like to use and live in a world where we do not use the color of people's skin to identify someone. I'm starting to lose hope that we as a people are going to stop seeing color. You know, when Warren Moon started playing quarterback for the Houston Oilers, that was a very long time ago, they were using, you know, first black quarterback or black quarterback for the Houston Oilers, and I thought we'd stop using that phrase. It didn't happen then. Doug Williams won the Super Bowl MVP for the Washington Redskins. Didn't stop using the term black quarterback. He won MVP, and you'd think it'd be done, but no. ESPN accepted Rush Limbaugh's resignation. He should have been fired by ESPN, but they accepted his resignation. That was good enough for me. When he made comments that the media desired a black quarterback do well when he was talking in reference about Donovan McNabb, I thought then we'd stop using the term black quarterback. Black running back, black wide receiver. Just stop using it. They're quarterbacks. There's been so many of them now that you would just think it's quarterback Jameis Winston. It's quarterback Donovan McNabb. It's quarterback Michael Vick. I would just don't see his color. Just see the greatness of his athleticism and let it stand that he's a quarterback. Unfortunately, when you got players still talking like this, it makes me lose hope that I am ever going to see the day where we in this world stop seeing color. And I think McCoy is wrong. I'll talk to Richard a little bit about this later on the show, but I feel he's wrong. Now, Ted Wells has released his report about the New England Patriots and Tom Brady, and The report is pretty damning, especially for Brady. It says that Brady, it's more reasonable than not that he knew the shenanigans that the equipment managers were doing with deflating the footballs. There's some pretty damning texts and testimony from those equipment guys. I think the fallout is going to be huge. I expect a pretty huge suspension for Tom Brady. I don't know if the NFL, this report sort of kind of clears the Patriots. It certainly clears the front office and head coach Bill Belichick. But you got to remember, Goodell, his famous ignorance is not an excuse to Sean Payton back in the day. So maybe Belichick gets a fine or a suspension. I just know that this report, I know now why it took so long. They interviewed so many people. They had to go through a lot of documentation. But it's out there now. Oh, sorry about that. it's out there now, and I think that there's a lot of people who are coming to Tom Brady's defense. I'm not one of those people. And I'll tell you why real quickly before I get Richard on the phone here. I believe that if you are accused of something you did not do, you come out swinging vigorously to defend your name and your honor. And if you know me, and if you know me for a long time, and I know there's some of you that have, one of my biggest pet peeves and one thing that I absolutely hate, I don't hate a lot of things, I hate this. I hate being accused of something I did not do. And I know it stems back to when I was a kid, and I'm the youngest of 10, and my older brothers would go in, and they'd mess up my mom's room, and they would say, hey, Mom, Steven messed up your room, and I would get in trouble for it when I didn't do anything. I think it stems from some of that. Okay, it's kind of a funny story, but I think it's true. I would get in trouble for something I did not do. And so my biggest pet peeve is being accused when anybody has ever accused me of something that I did not do. Oh, we go to war. We go to the mattresses, all right, in a Godfather term. It's the mattresses time. You are accusing me of something that I had no part in. We're going to war, and I'm going to show you everything that I can possibly show you to clear my name, to prove to you that you are a liar because you're accusing me of something I did not do. And Tom Brady has had multiple opportunities to do this. He has had interviews. He has been in front of the media. He has been asked questions time and time again, and all he ever does is sidestep the question without ever saying, I never asked anybody to deflate the footballs. I do not do this. I do like them to be a little bit softer, and I said stay within the rules. I've never said deflate the footballs. I don't do that. That's not what I do. That's not what I'm about. He's never come out and said that. That's all I wanted from Tom. I would believe that because I said, you know what? He's coming out and he's defending his name. Well, Tom has been sidestepping and sidestepping and sidestepping that enough is enough. And now I think that this report is out. It's pretty evident that he did not ever say, I did not ask for the footballs to be deflated, because he knows then he would be lying even more. And the fact that he didn't want to give over, I guess it's come out that people said that he didn't want to give his phone. I wouldn't want to give over my phone either. But he was asked for the text from the phone. It would just take copies. He didn't want to do that. So that leads me to believe there is something on that phone via text messages to one of those guys that you don't want people to see. I'm very curious to see what the NFL is going to do with this. I'd be shocked if they just find him. If they just find him, I think there are going to be a lot of players that will be upset about this, and they have every right to be. So very, very interested to see what's going on. All right, let's call Graves in. Joining me right now, good friend, buddy Richard Graves of Sky Sports News. What's up, buddy?
Hey, Steve. Good to be back on the show with you. You say there's been a lot of news. I thought we were coming on just to talk about the draft when you got in touch. But wow, the last 24 hours especially, where do we start?
Well, that's right. I did say it's going to be a draft recap show, and we'll touch on that shortly. But right now, let's get right to it. We'll start with one of the biggest bombshells. Ted Wells has released his independent investigative report on the releasing of air in the footballs used in the AFC title game. The wording leaves a little wiggle room, but it says most likely than not, Tom Brady was aware of what was happening between the two equipment personnel there. Those guys were called out as being the culprits. The report is pretty damning. It says, you know, well, they took the balls into this room because he had to go to the bathroom, but there's no urinals in there. I don't know where he went to the bathroom. They've got texts going back and forth that, you know, Tom Brady was going to give them some autographed memorabilia, which they have claimed and they have shown that they've got. They've got texts. And I'm reserving judgment until I hear from the NFL. But what do you think, man?
Well, where to start with it? Let's be honest. We were speaking before we went on air, and this report definitely leaves some wriggle room in it for the NFL, doesn't it? And when you bear in mind how strongly Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots, came out against this report on Wednesday night. It's going to be really interesting to see how the NFL handle this. But it's these ambiguous phrases in this report that really get to me. Things like, we have concluded that it is more probable than not that Jim McNally, he was the officials locker room attendant for the Patriots, and John Jastrzemski, who was the equipment assistant for the Patriots, they say it's more probable than not that they participated in a deliberate effort to release air from the from Patriots game balls after the balls were examined by the game day referee. And they also say, based on this evidence, it's also our view that it is more probable than not that Tom Brady was at least generally aware of the inappropriate activities. Well, either you are or you're not. This is the issue I've got with it. How can it be more probable than not generally aware, in our view? The report was commissioned to get to the bottom of this.
Well, has there ever been any sort of... Has there ever been a more non-committal statement ever? More probable than not?
This is my whole issue with it. It's pointing the finger, saying, we think you did, but we don't have solid evidence, so we're not going to go all the way. And this, for me, leaves us back in square one. It doesn't resolve anything. If anything, it raises more questions.
Well, here's my question to you. Look, it looks to me, and I'm actually reading a report right now, where it looks like Roger Goodell is not going to be involved with the punishment, that he's doling that out to Troy Vincent, the VP of football operations. Wait a minute. Goodell's always been the one to levy down punishments and fines. Why all of a sudden is he saying, hey, someone else is going to do it?
Well, for me, this is a two-pronged issue. One, Roger Goodell wants to be seen as whiter than white after what's gone on in the NFL generally in the last 12 months. So by delegating responsibility for any punishments that may come down to Troy Vincent, he likes to think that that gives him and the NFL as a whole an air of impartiality in any decision that may be made. But secondly, and we saw this in the week leading up to the Super Bowl in Glendale, Arizona, this January, Robert Kraft freely admitted when he gave that impromptu press conference that he and the commissioner have a good relationship. And you do have to wonder to what extent that plays in this decision. Say, right, Troy Vincent, you're the man that deals with giving out punishments on this occasion. It's your responsibility to analyse this report and then decide what the appropriate action is. Again, it's a very murky situation. From start to finish, there's been a lot of hearsay going on. This report from Ted Wells, for me, doesn't clear it up. If anything, it's just muddied the waters a little bit. And yet, outside of the issue, you've got everybody looking at it and saying, well, hang on, it looks pretty much to us as if there was something going on here. I mean, for example, Troy Aikman was telling everybody that would listen in the wake of the Deflategate scandal breaking that there was no way in his mind that the quarterback does not know if the ball pressure is altered in any way. He has to be party to it. And it appears now that, at least by implication of this report, that was the case.
Right. Well, here's Goodell's statement after the report was released. He said, Troy Vincent, VP of football operations, and his team will consider what steps to take in light of this report, both with respect to possible disciplinary action and to any changes in protocols that are necessary to avoid future incidents of this type. So in that statement, to me, that means, hey, I'm washing my hands. Troy Vincent's going to come up with the disciplinary action. He's going to hopefully come up with a new system so that this doesn't happen again. And I'm out of it. And I'm just saying, this is the integrity of the game. Now, I've been a big proponent very much in the very beginning saying this had zero outcome in the game. The Indianapolis Colts got beat down. But had this been a 3-point game, a 4-point game, we'd be talking about the integrity of the game here with these footballs. Now, ultimately, I don't think it had anything to do with how the game was played, but there are signs pointing that the quarterback of your franchise was talking with the equipment people, was kind of paying them off, if you will, with autographed footballs and shoes and posters and what have you, UGG boots, because he's, you know, got an endorsement with UGGs, and they were doing doctoring these footballs. Tony Dungy came out this morning and said, look, no equipment manager is just going to change the football just to change the football and say, you know what, let's see if this helps out Tom Brady. No, he's like, these guys talk to Tom Brady. They know exactly how he wants the football, and these techs are – no one wants to use them as a smoking gun, but they're mentioning Tom by name in these texts.
And that is what I'm saying. When you've got respected people that have been in the game, know what they're on about, knows what goes on, the mechanics of leading up to game day, like Tony Dungy, like Troy Aikman, proven winners within the game, when they're coming out and saying something doesn't add up, this is the way it goes, then at some point you've got to say, well, these guys, whether the report vindicates everybody in the New England Patriots organization or not. And let's be honest, this doesn't vindicate everybody in the Patriots organization. It points the finger squarely at Tom Brady and those assistants in the lead up to the game. So when you've got respected characters saying, hang on, it doesn't smell right to me, we think that Tom Brady must have known, then you've got to listen to these people.
Okay, so big question here. Knowing what we know, the report is out there. I've actually, if you want, folks, I've got the entire report up on NFL Rants and Raves. You can come out there and download the PDF, a big, huge, gigantic 256-page document, and you can read it all if you want. It's available for you on NFLRNR.com. Now that we have this, Richard, does Tom Brady get one, A, slap on the wrist and gets a fine, B, gets suspended multiple games, or C, nothing?
Oh, it's a difficult one to call. This is the problem with this whole Ted Welch report, isn't it? Like I said at the very top of the show, it leaves a lot of wriggle room. I think the pressure from outside is going to be so much that the NFL are going to have to be seen to take some action, because let's not forget, they represent all 32 teams in the NFL.
Right.
And if you're an exponent of the integrity of the game, which Commissioner Roger Goodell has built his tenure on, the integrity of the game, then this cannot go unpunished.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. Probably nothing will happen until next week, so we may have to come on and talk about the punishment. But if there were
Here's the dilemma. If you, for example, I mean, let's be honest. The options open to the NFL range between a fine to taking away draft picks to multiple game suspensions, depending on how they view the severity of it. If you point the finger at Tom Brady and say he even gets a 2-game ban, well, what's the NFL's flagship game? The season opener, Thursday night. You know, the defending Super Bowl champions.
Jimmy Garoppolo, baby.
It's a problem.
Jimmy Garoppolo, baby. Jimmy Garoppolo against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Hey, it kind of works. The Patriots won't have their number one signal caller, Garoppolo. Brady, and so Garoppolo have to play. And the Steelers won't have their number one running back, Bell, because he's suspended for a couple games.
Would that make you happier?
Are you saying, do I want to see Roethlisberger versus Garoppolo? I don't know. I'm
just saying, the last time we did a podcast, you seemed pretty put out that Le'Veon Bell wasn't going to be in action and it was a conspiracy in favor of the Patriots.
You know?
That's all I'm saying.
I did say that, you know, it was kind of a nice coincidence that once again for the Patriots, they meet an AFC foe without one of their top weapons. It's always something convenient for that works in their way. It would be kind of nice. I'm just saying, maybe it would be nice to see it go the other way just once.
Well, we'll see, I guess. It may make you happy, put it that way.
Well, yeah, I know. There's a bunch of New England Patriots fans right now that are throwing stuff at their iPods, I am sure. All right, enough of Deflategate. Let's talk about another kind of potential black eye to the National Football League. I spoke about it a little bit earlier in my opening. Running back LeSean McCoy, now with the Buffalo Bills, previously of the Philadelphia Eagles, came out and said some pretty damning things about head coach Chip Kelly there of the Philadelphia Eagles. basically, what he had to say is that without calling him a racist, he kind of said Chip Kelly is a racist. And here, I'll tell you exactly what he said. He said that the quote was, "You see how fast he got rid of all the good players, especially all the good black players. He got rid of them the fastest. That's the truth. It's hard to explain with him, but there's a reason he got rid of all the black players, the good ones, just like that." Those were McCoy's statements. The Eagles declined to comment on those statements. What do you think about that?
Well, I've got to tell you, I think it's a real head-scratcher. I'm not quite sure where LeSean McCoy's coming from, because everyone has said, wow, you know, you've got rid of your best players at skill positions, be it McCoy himself, DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin. You look at the players that Chip Kelly's brought in over the last 12 months. He traded for Darren Sproles from New Orleans. He then makes a big money free agent signing this offseason, bringing DeMarco Murray in from the Dallas Cowboys. He trades his quarterback, Nick Foles, to the St. Louis Rams for Sam Bradford. Those aren't the moves of a racist guy. Those are the moves of somebody who's trying to mold the team in his own image, trying to make his team better. So I really do struggle to see where LeSean McCoy is coming from on this one.
Yeah, I said earlier in the opening of the show that I just think he's flat out wrong. Chip Kelly is no saint. He does crazy things, but I think the things he does is for the benefit of his football team, and it's regardless of color. I know I could go back to college, and LeGarrette Blount, you know, the running back.
Yeah.
LeGarrette Blount got in trouble in college. He sucker punched another player, and had Chip Kelly not been there, I don't think LeGarrette Blount is playing in the NFL right now. Last I checked, he's African-American as well. So I'm not exactly sure what LeSean McCoy's problem is. I think it's sour grapes. Really, honestly, he's just sad that he's gone from Philadelphia. I know he's very happy there. He's now with the Bills, and he's probably just – there's no closure for him, and he just wants to close it up, and this might be the statement to kind of go out with a bang.
Well, look, and we're going to get to see the Buffalo Bills and LeSean McCoy in action at Wembley over here in the UK later this year, and I, for one, can't wait to see him out on a field live in front of us. But I think LeSean McCoy, as great an NFL running back as he is, and he's had some fantastic seasons with the Philadelphia Eagles, sour grapes is one thing. To come out and imply that somebody's a racist is a whole different level. And I think when you carry the stature that he does in the game and people listen to what you've got to say, you've got to choose your words very carefully. And this, it leaves a sour taste in the mouth for me.
Yeah, not very good. Okay, big news for you, Richard Graves. The Dallas Cowboys come out of nowhere and headed to Dallas. The 1 minute you're hearing that Lael Collins is going to visit with the Cowboys, the very next thing you hear, he signed with the Cowboys. What's going on?
And from what I hear, the Dallas Cowboys rolled out the red carpet to get Lael Collins as well. Reports that are coming through suggest that he was invited into Dallas for a meeting. That meeting took place at Jerry Jones's own home. Tony Romo is supposed to have been present, as were key members of that offensive line. They wooed Lael Collins. They wanted this undrafted free agent. Remember, he was projected to be a top 10 pick, perhaps, in the first round of the draft. So for Dallas to get him on what I hear is a three-year contract worth around $1.7 million, wow, that is, for what was already seen as a major strength in this team, the offensive line. Many people were marketing it as the best offensive line in all of football. It's just got better.
Yeah, and I think what one of the things I heard is that they wooed him as the Cowboys wanted to build the best offensive line in the history of the NFL. Certainly, they got a chance to become that. Now I say, hey, put me back there and let me run the football. Behind these guys, I'll run for 1,600 yards in the season. Okay,
well,
maybe not.
Look at the offensive line as it's projected to line up for that opening game of the season in 2015. At left tackle, you have Tyron Smith. Center, you have Travis Fredericks. At right guard, Zach Martin. Three first-round picks. Then you have a veteran right tackle in Doug Free. The man I'm hearing might be the one to make way would be undrafted free agent Ron Leary at left guard. So you insert Lael Collins there. And on paper, at least, games okay aren't won on paper, but on paper, that is a fearsome offensive line.
Yeah, that looks pretty formidable. The fact that it only took $1.7 million, now I'm understanding that is fully guaranteed, $1.7 million fully guaranteed, but for 3 years?
It's a steal.
It is a steal, and, you know, you got to couple that with the fact that the Cowboys also got another first-round talent in the second round when they took Randall Gregory. That's two top 10 guys that they're getting for the cheap.
Well, you know, I tweeted this out earlier. The Dallas Cowboys were seen to have done good business on their first two picks, getting Randall Gregory down at the 60th overall pick, and in the first round taking Byron Jones. But then there were question marks asked over Chaz Green and a whole series of defensive ball players taken in the latter rounds. But I tell you, you look at this draft now, if you throw in Lyle Collins in there, and essentially what Dallas seem to have done is got three projected top 20 picks out of this draft. And if that's the case, and they can get everybody focused on playing football and forget all of the off-field distractions, then I tell you, the Dallas Cowboys have knocked this draft out of the park.
All right, so before we get to the actual draft itself, and we're talking about the Dallas Cowboys, how about we get Adrian Peterson now? Are you on board with that?
You're still going on with it. You've got to let it go, man. When we were last on here, I say, over 2.5 weeks ago, your parting words to me were, mark my words, I will call you this weekend when Dallas have traded for AP. Well, I tell you, my phone's been on for the whole 2.5 weeks. I've purposely left the line open, and not once has the name Stephen Miranda appeared there.
I got a busy signal when I called on Sunday. It was I don't know who you were on the phone with. Maybe you were on the phone with Kate. I'm not sure. But I got a busy signal.
Hey, my phone line's always open for you. That's all I'm saying. I'm still waiting for that call. It hasn't come.
I might, just so you know, just so that we're on the level and everything's out in the open, I might have cursed you when I saw that tweet during the weekend, during the draft. Still waiting for that phone call. I was like, oh, that Richard Graves.
I never got a reply to that either.
I was fuming. I was fuming that the Cowboys didn't draft the running back anywhere. So much for Adrian Peterson. They didn't get anybody to run the football. Nobody. So that means they've, in their minds and in their souls, have decided we are good with Darren McFadden, Joseph Randall, Lance Dunbar, and Ryan freaking Williams. And they believe that they're going to cobble from those four guys a tandem to put up the amount of yards that DeMarco Murray put up last year, and they're wrong. They're not going to get it from those guys. They could have the wall from Game of Thrones. You know the big ice wall? They could have that wall, and they could be plowing teams with that wall, and I'm not sure that the guys running the football behind that line right now are going to get it done.
I actually agree with you. I think you go back to the 90s and that great Dallas Cowboys team that won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years. But if you remember, after they won that first Super Bowl, Emmitt Smith held out for the first two weeks of the season.
First two games, and they lost.
Jerry Jones brought out the checkbook. Emmitt Smith comes in, and away the Cowboys juggernaut rolls. They're hedging a lot of their money and bets, if you like, for me at least, on the form of Darren McFadden. And for the last 2 years, he hasn't produced. Now, it's a great offensive line. It looks strong. It played fantastically well last year. But they need Darren McFadden to be the Darren McFadden of 2 or 3 years ago if this is going to work.
Yeah, that's a big if. That's a big if. It's Darren McFadden there. All right, let's take a look at the draft. First off, my initial problem with the draft is day one was quiet. There were two trades the entire night. I kept waiting, oh, here comes the big trade, here comes the big trade, and it never came. It was so silent. I think the year before there were 9 trades in day one, and the year before that there were 14 trades in day one. So it was very odd. How did you feel day one kind of panned out?
I was surprised, but I tell you what, for all those people that were waiting, looking for the big trades, it all hung on what the Tennessee Titans were doing with the number 2 pick. If they had traded out of that number 2 pick, or if they'd taken Leonard Williams, as I thought they would, then the dominoes would have begun to fall, and you'd have seen teams scrambling to try and get hold of Marcus Mariota. For the Tennessee Titans to say, no, we will stay with the board and we'll take Mariota, well, all of a sudden then I think that showed you what this draft class really was. No real outstanding player as such, certainly not one that you want to leap up from 20 to 6 to and perhaps mortgage the next few years of your franchise on. So everybody stayed pat. Everybody took the man they perceived to fit their needs or be the best player on the draft board. And as a result of that, you saw us dropping all the way down to the 15th overall pick before the San Diego Chargers jumped up two places to take Melvin Gordon. And when you consider what the Broncos then later in the first round gave up to move up five or six places, I think the Chargers paid a fairly high price just to jump up two when the San Francisco 49ers, for me, were never taking Gordon.
Yeah, but I think the reason they jumped up two spots is they wanted to get above the Texans because it's a possibility that Houston might have taken him. Arian Foster's on his final years there, running on his last legs, might not have enough in the tank. So they might have taken him, and I think the Chargers wanted to make sure that they got him. So that's why they moved up there. I think do think they paid a pretty penny. I want to talk still in the top five. After Mariota, you had Dante Fowler Jr. go to the Jags. I think that was a great pick. You know, the Raiders, they just can't resist themselves. They're the Oakland Raiders. So they went with the talented, fast wide receiver, Amari Cooper. But then I think the big shocker for me was the Washington Redskins. This was a defense last year that got shredded by a lot of football teams. Leonard Williams is on the board, and they bypass him to take offensive guard Brandon Schreff. Explain that move to me.
I was shocked. I could not believe it. First of all, I was surprised that Williams dropped as far as Washington anyway. And then to take Brandon Schreff, he was, for me, my top-rated offensive lineman after Lyle Collins fell out of the first round of the draft. But from what you hear from the Redskins organization, they're projecting Schreff to be a tackle, maybe even the left tackle to protect RG3's blind side. He is not an NFL tackle. He's certainly not a left tackle in the NFL to start with in his rookie season. I see him more maybe as a guard. It's another head scratcher. You look at what Washington have done in recent years, and there's a reason that, with the exception of RG3's rookie year, they have been either on, if not near the basement of the NFC East. And this is another example of that for me. We spoke on the last podcast and said, look, whatever they do, they can't go wrong. They've got that many holes to fill. I hate to say it, but I think with the fifth overall pick, they went wrong.
You and me both. I tweeted that unless this guy becomes a Hall of Fame offensive lineman, they're going to rue the day they didn't take Leonard Williams, because he would have solidified their defense tremendously.
Well, when you consider that they lost Brian Arakpo to free agency as well, you've got a man here who I said flat out for me, the best defensive lineman in the entire draft. He can play anywhere along the defensive line. He'll get movement. He gets to the quarterback. He's athletic enough to make interceptions. 6'5", over 300 pounds. You know, he's a freak of an athlete. And you allow him to drop, you allow him to pass. I'll tell you how good he is. You've got the New York Jets sitting behind Washington with the sixth overall pick. They've already got two fantastic defensive linemen. And they don't need Leonard Williams, but they looked at him and said, you know what? This guy is that good. We can't afford to pass on him. We will take him and fit him into our team anyway.
Absolutely. It's a big mess. That Jets defense now looks pretty formidable. I think they did it because they know that at most Geno Williams is only going to be able to score about 13, 14 points. So if they can hold the other team to less than 14, they're going to win some football games. But no, the Leonard Williams moves by the Jets, one of the best of the night. I really like that. We're going to move down to spot number 10, where the St. Louis Rams kind of pretty much shocked everybody. And they picked running back Todd Gurley from Georgia with the 10th overall pick. This was a move that I think kind of shocked a lot of people, especially some of the teams below them. I think another reason why the Chargers moved up to 15 to make sure that they got Melvin Gordon. But here are the Rams, who then Zach Stacy says, I want to trade because you guys got another running back, and they trade him to the Jets. So the Jets get another nice piece. Zach Stacy's not going to be the best running back in the world, but he certainly can put up numbers. And now he's with the Jets and the Rams. Take Gurley. What do you think of that move?
Well, I don't understand Zach Stacy having requested a trade, then agreeing to go to be traded to the New York Jets, because I still think he's the fourth choice running back on that roster there. As for the St. Louis Rams, you're right. We looked at it, and I really felt that they needed to go offensive line in the first round of this draft. But you then look at who they're up against in the NFC West, and you see that the Arizona Cardinals, you know they really want a running back. For years, the San Francisco 49ers offense has been built on a power running game. Obviously, you've got Marshawn Lynch up there in Seattle. So now you say, we will take the best running back in this draft, a man we project to be an elite running back down the line, Todd Gurley, and you match power with power. It makes sense when you consider that before you think of championships, you've got to get out of your own division. And now they've gone like for like, and defensively, they were pretty good for a lot of last season, I think. This actually makes sense when you think about it.
All right. What do you think the Browns did? They had two picks in the top 20. They had pick number 12, and then they also had pick number 19. How do you feel they took care of business there with those two picks?
Well, they were fairly conservative, weren't they? I think most people were a little bit surprised when they drafted Cam Irvin, who I had to smile because I had him down as a center. But actually, when he was drafted, they put him on the paper and said, well, we'll take him as a guard. And that gives them cover should they need it for what was already a fairly one of the few strengths on this team, if you like. And then they went defense as well with the 12th pick. Again, you know, it's a tough division that they're battling with. They've got Pittsburgh, whose defense is having to have pieces reintroduced because that's going through a big change. But you've got the Ravens as well in that division. It was a surprisingly sensible draft for me with the Cleveland Browns. When you've seen in previous years, they went Justin Gilbert last year, and of course Johnny Football. And we've seen before that them take quarterbacks in Brady Quinn and Brandon Weeden. It hasn't worked out. So maybe, just maybe, this time they're thinking, having taken Josh McCown through free agency, he's projected to be the starter in week one at the moment. Maybe they're thinking, if we can provide pieces around him, maybe that'll be enough.
Well, I was okay with at 12 them taking Danny Shelton. I thought that was, you know, definitely they need to focus on defense. I just thought that the Cam Irving pick at 19 was kind of a stretch. I think he would have been there a little bit later on.
I agree.
You know, at 19 overall, I think they could have done a little bit better for themselves, but that's where they went. I had Cam Irving rated a little bit lower on my board.
Well, this is the thing. If you look at the Cam Irving pick, the starting center for Cleveland, whose name escapes me right now, but he's in a contracts year coming up.
Yep.
And so he's got leverage. Well, suddenly you have Cam Irving there, who you can plug in at guard right now. If things don't go Cleveland's way, then they can say, you know what, we've got cover should we lose our starting center. As for the defensive side of the ball, as I said, I think Danny Shelton was a solid pick. And it's a great story as well when you consider the adversity he had to go through in the years getting towards the draft. You root for a guy like that, and you hope it works out for him.
All right. How about the Baltimore Ravens? It seems to me like Ozzie Newsome, always a clever, clever man, always gets some great players. With the 26th pick overall, I took wide receiver from Central Florida, Breshad Perriman. And then in the second round, coupled that with tight end Max Williams, Joe Flacco's got to be the happiest dude on the planet right now. He's like, man, my guys just keep getting me weapons.
Well, Max Williams is the best tight end in this draft class.
And they got him in the second round.
A good pick in the second round, because let's not forget Dennis Pitt has been injured.
Right.
He's trying to get back, but he's not by no means a sure thing for the new season. So you give Flacco somebody over the middle there. And then with the wide receiver, remember that they lost Torrey Smith.
Right.
To free agency. So you needed somebody opposite Steve Smith. And, you know, you come into a setup like that as a young rookie wideout, what better man to learn from than Steve Smith? You know, he's aggressive, he's competitive, he's skilled, he's a team man. You want him on your side. That's a great situation for him. And you look at the Baltimore Ravens and you say, you know what, they're going to be competitive again.
Yeah, I also like their running back that they took in the fourth round, Jarvis Allen, this guy out of SC. For me to say that I like that pick is huge because you know how much I despise the University of Southern California. But he's a good guy. He runs the ball. He's an effective downhill runner for a team that, you know, Bernard Pierce, and they were, you know, trying to figure out what their backfield is going to look like. It's another important piece that they were able to pick up in the fourth round.
Well, it's an interesting pick for me as well. They re-signed Justin Forsett just a few weeks ago as well. So he's likely to start once again as the lead running back in that backfield. Bernard Pierce disappointed last year. He didn't take on the workload. So now you bring in a rookie and suddenly you've got options again. And this is what I mean when I say the Baltimore Ravens, without a doubt, are going to be a force in that division this season.
Absolutely. Watch out for the Ravens. How'd the Carolina Panthers do? You know, the Panthers had picks, a later pick because they were in the playoffs. And at that position, I'm trying to remember the
Jack Thompson.
They went with a linebacker, right? Linebacker.
That's right, exactly. And a linebacker who is very much learning his trade. He's a bit of a utility player. He's played a bit of free safety. He's played a bit of linebacker. He's played other positions as well. Again, a little bit surprising. In my mock draft, I had them going at linebacker, which raised a few eyebrows from people that saw it, because it was felt that maybe that wasn't a great position of need. But I also think that the Carolina Panthers felt that defensively they were a little bit porous up until the stretch in last season. They wanted to solidify that area. Remember, they'd lost Greg Hardy last year when they expected to have him for the season, and now he's gone to Dallas. So I wasn't surprised with the positional pick. I was a bit surprised they took Shaq Thompson, who, I think it was a bit of a stretch taking him in the first round.
All right. The Detroit Lions are getting a ton of flack for their draft. I think they drafted a lot of positions that they needed, but not necessarily big names. And it starts with Duke's offensive guard, Lakeil Tomlinson, that they took in the first round. With the 28th pick that they got from the Broncos, what else do you see going on with the Detroit Lions there in their draft?
Well, of course, they lost Ndamukong Suh, didn't they? Well, and Nick Fairley as well. So that's a huge gaping hole you've left in your defense. Admittedly, they brought in Haloti Ngata from Baltimore, but you thought that defense might be the...
Where they went in the first round. Right?
Sorry?
I mean, weren't you expecting them to go defense in the first round scene
as they lost
those pieces?
And that's why I was just about to say I was surprised when they went offensive line, because I don't think that was a pressing need for the Detroit Lions. Having said all that, look, that organization did a lot of things right last year. And I think by doing what they did and getting to the playoffs and losing perhaps a little bit, unfortunately, in Dallas, they've bought themselves the right to a little bit of leeway and see how this works out. But look, I agree with you. I was a bit surprised.
All right. The Green Bay Packers, with the 30th pick overall, decided to go with a safety from Arizona State. The Packers then later on kind of upset me a little bit. Because they took quarterback Brett Hundley from UCLA. I sort of kind of was hoping that he would fall down a little bit further for the Dallas Cowboys to pick up for the future of the franchise. What are the Packers thinking? Aaron Rodgers is in no way, shape, or form ready to relinquish this team in 5, 6, even 7 years from now. Why would they take a quarterback like Brett Hundley at the fifth round?
Well, you only have to go back 2 years when Aaron Rodgers missed basically the second half of the season with injury. And they went through several different quarterbacks, finishing with Matt Flynn, didn't they? And ended up missing out on the playoffs altogether. And I think they look at this situation. Let's not forget, it wasn't that long ago that Aaron Rodgers fell in the draft and the Green Bay Packers took him. And everyone was saying, wow, what are the Packers doing? They've still got Brett Favre. He's still got three or four more years left in him at the top level. This doesn't make sense. Well, I think they've looked at that situation, learnt from a couple of years ago when Rodgers went down injured, and said, we think that in Brett Hundley, we've got somebody that we can bring on here that can develop and learn behind Aaron Rodgers. And then suddenly they've got an insurance policy if anything goes wrong. I think it's a wise move from a team that's a good team already. Let's not forget there were many people's picks to go all the way and win the Super Bowl last year. So they've strengthened their team with that pick, even if he's not going to be a starter this season or even next season. They've got somebody there that solidifies the quarterback position.
All right. We'll see if Brett indeed winds up as the backup quarterback to Aaron Rodgers there. Finally, the New England Patriots, the team who, to me, it always seems like the Patriots, they trade out of picks. Didn't see that much from them this year. I was expecting somehow the Patriots weren't going to pick the 32nd pick last over on the first round and get a couple more picks because they just like to stockpile them. But they did. They took defensive tackle Malcolm Brown from Texas. I think it's a great pick for them because, you know, what is everybody always saying about the Patriots? It's their defense. It's their defense. Well, here's a good defensive piece. And they also got some other good defensive pieces in the second, third, and fourth round. So what do you think about the Patriots' moves?
I was telling everybody that would listen leading up to draft night that the one thing you can bank on is the New England Patriots will not be picking at 32. Bill Belichick and the team will trade out of the first round and stockpile picks. Well, boy, I got that wrong. But wow, did they get a good one fall to them at 32 when Dallas were on the clock. I texted you at the time and said, Malcolm Brown's there. Dallas can't believe their luck. I was convinced that they were going to take Malcolm Brown. As it was, they went Byron Jones, and Brown fell all the way to the New England Patriots. Who have they just let go? Big Vince Wilfork. I'm not going to say he's going to immediately step in and do all the things that Wilfork has done for years in New England, but wow, they've got a good player to step in and take his place. He immediately starts from day one and helps them out on that defensive line.
Yeah, and not to mention they picked up two defensive ends, Oklahoma's Geno Grissom and Trey Flowers from Arkansas in the third and fourth. So I think that, if anything, they're going to have their problems, Patriots, especially if they have to deal with any kind of suspension from Tom Brady. But on the defensive side of the ball, I think at least I see them have gotten better there.
They need to generate pass rush on right. defense, don't they, this year? Because they've lost Brandon Browner. They've lost Darrell Revis. I don't care who you are, how good you think you are, to lose two players of that caliber in the one position at quarterback, that's going to hurt any team. And that's going to be a big mountain for the Patriots to overcome this year, regardless of what happens with the whole Tom Brady Deflategate situation. It'll be interesting to see how it works out. I don't think those latter round picks will go into the starting rotation. It may be that they're pieces that are used in situational passages of play during games. But without doubt, I'm a big fan of Malcolm Brown. I think he's a good selection, and I think the Patriots are delighted that he fell all the way to them at 32.
All right. Any other things that you want to talk about, maybe day one or day two, that kind of stood out in your mind as you watched the draft?
Well, we've already touched upon it, haven't we? But Randy Gregory falling all the way to Dallas at 60. There's always one player that falls in the draft. And without doubt, from what you're hearing, it was the off-field character issues surrounding Randy Gregory. In some cases, you heard of some teams just taking him completely off their draft board. They didn't want to go anywhere near him. As it was, Dallas have rolled the dice and they're taking a chance on him. He's great value for the skill set that he brings to the Dallas Cowboys. The challenge is going to be keeping his head straight and keeping him focused on football. I heard some people compare it to a Charles Haley-like situation when they brought him in from San Francisco in the early 90s. Charles Haley's going to the Hall of Fame. If he's half that sort of player and stays out of trouble, Dallas will consider this to be a big hit in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Cowboys, especially now with the Lael Collins signing today. They got Collins, Gregory fell late, and then, you know, they brought in Hardy. And Hardy's already been suspended 10 games. But if these other two players don't get suspended at all this season and they turn out to be even half the guys they are, they will have gotten some great talent for very, very inexpensive for the next 3 years. They'll be set. They'll be able to look at skill positions. They'll be able to look at possibly signing Dez Bryant long-term, giving him the big contract that he wants. And maybe, I'm just saying, you know, I don't want to, you know, push your buttons. You know, you can go out and you can make a deal for an Adrian Peterson or something like that.
Well, I think that's a good a place then to stop talking about the Dallas Cowboys because you've been drinking the Kool-Aid again, quite clearly. The one other thing that wasn't a surprise, but I still have big question marks over, is the choice of Jameis Winston with the first overall pick going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Wrong pick.
Sorry?
The wrong pick.
Yeah, oh, completely. And I think it's going to be one that backfires for them going down the line. What does he do that within hours of being taken number one, he posts a picture of himself on social media with a load of crab's legs, which you're led to believe, from what we hear, that the Bucks organization strongly advised him to remove, which he duly did. It's that sort of immaturity that put a lot of teams off of Jameis Winston and had them taking Marcus Mariota as their best quarterback on their draft board. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I think Lovie Smith and the Bucks need it to work out for them. I'm not sure it will. As for Mariota himself, I'm sure he'll get over the fact that the commissioner, Roger Goodell, failed to pronounce his surname correctly when he was selected in the draft, but
I don't even know what he said.
Mariado, I think, was the way he pronounced it, which was interesting. But yeah, for Ken Whisenhunt and the team down in Tennessee to take him, a lot's going to be expected of him because there are a lot of rumors circulating about what the Philadelphia Eagles were willing to give up to trade into that spot to get Marcus Mariota. Chip Kelly's said that might not been in the case. Either way, the expectations and the stakes have been raised for Mariota. If there's patience with him and he's allowed to learn and grow into their system, then 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line, we may be looking back on that pick and saying, wow, the Tennessee Titans hit a home run there.
We might find out week one because Tennessee plays Tampa Bay, baby.
And that's a matchup, let's be honest, isn't it? You looked when the schedule came out and you said Tennessee, Tampa Bay, well, that doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
I will give you anything right now. The week one matchup between the Titans and the Bucks goes on national TV.
And I'm watching it. Mariota versus Winston. Go Titans in that game. That's what I'm going to be saying. Richard, thank you very much for coming on the show. As always, we talk, and then the next thing you know, we've been chatting for 45 minutes. But always great to hear your opinion on stuff that's happening in the league. Let's just see. Let's bring on training camp. How soon can we start training camps?
Well, the NFL have released their schedules within the last hour and a half or so. OTAs are scheduled for, I think it's the penultimate weekend of May. And then we look at workouts for June, and then we're into training camp at the back end of July. Before we know it, we'll be into September and away we go again.
Let's bring it on. I can't wait. We always have to wait so much, but thankfully I've got 256 pages to continue reading here with my Ted Wells report because I want to thoroughly know everything he has to say about Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. Richard Graves, thanks for joining me, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Pleasure as always, Steve.
Oh, wow. Every time I've got Gravesy on the show, show just seems to go long. I can't believe we're almost at about an hour. So just remember, emails, check them. If you played fantasy football last year and you won, Periscope, new application, new app for your phone, works with Twitter, at NFL R&R. Check it out. So some live streams coming your way. I'm Steven Miranda, and this has been NFL Rants and Raves. I'm out. Okay, so that was supposed to be the end of the show. Obviously, as you heard, I recorded that with Richard last week on Thursday, but for the last several days, I've had all kinds of technical difficulties uploading the podcast. Since then, the NFL has come down on Tom Brady, so I would be remiss if I didn't add this here at the end. I wish I would have had Richard to talk with about this, but here's my two cents. The NFL punished Tom Brady by suspending him for four games. They also fined the Patriots $1 million, a first-round pick next year's draft, 2016, and a fourth-round pick in 2017. Here's my initial thoughts. I think it's a little light on Tom Brady and very heavy-handed for the New England Patriots. I think that the report kind of showed that the Patriots had nothing to do with it. It was Tom Brady and the equipment guys. So the Patriots are already handling their business with the equipment guys, the two guys that were named in the report. I'm not even going to try to pronounce their names. But Tom Brady, only four games. Now, remember, this is something that the league is looking at and saying that it was the integrity of the game that was at stake. And what you're telling us, NFL, is that you can cheat and it's only going to cost you a few games. Four games is nothing. That's not really going to affect Tom Brady at all. And a lot of people are saying, well, there's no actual proof that he did anything wrong. Go back and listen to the beginning of this where I ranted on what the report had to say. I clearly think he told these guys, this is the way I want you to do it. However you have to circumvent the rules, do it. That's what I like. And I just think that he hasn't come out yet and defended himself. And this is why I think the league got it wrong, because it's a four-game suspension. Of course he's going to appeal. He'll appeal this. It'll probably get reduced to maybe one or two games. And that's nothing. That is absolutely nothing. That's what the problem is with the suspension. I think the suspension should have been 6 to 8 games, and then you cut 2 or 3 games off of that after the appeal. Then you make a statement. By making it 4 and coming down to 1 or 2 after a suspension, that's not very good. I know that there are some Saint players that would be livid after what they got suspended for their involvement in Bountygate. Sean Payton, the head coach, got suspended for a year. And when he said, look, I didn't know this was happening, what did the commissioner say? Ignorance is not an excuse. You should know everything that happens on in your locker room, goes on in your locker room. Well, where's Belichick's suspension for that then? If ignorance is not an excuse, how come Belichick gets away scot-free because he just says, I didn't know it was doing, I don't think they were doing anything. These are equipment guys that your team hired that work for you, in essence. I just think I think the Patriots themselves, the organization, got a heavy-handed $1 million fine. Yeah, I know that that's not a lot of money for Kraft because he's worth like $4.8 billion, but it's $1 million, people. That's a lot. Then a first rounder next year and a fourth rounder the year after that, that is heavy. Those are the ones, as the Patriots organization, that I would be fine and be like, are you kidding me? We get 2 picks taken away and $1 million, and the report basically says that our organization was not involved. Bill Belichick, yes, wasn't involved, but he's the head coach. He should know what's going on, right? That's the excuse used with Sean Payton. And Tom Brady gets 4 games. After an appeal, suspension's probably reduced. He doesn't get the full brunt of the punishment that he should be getting, because he has never come out and said, I am innocent. His super agent has come out and pointed the finger on Ted Wells and saying, well, Wells worked for the league. He's not independent. There's a conspiracy. Everybody tried to trap the Patriots. Come on, man. Seriously? That's what you're coming out with? Oh, my goodness. I think it's light. Hopefully, next week when we come back again, I'll have Richard Graves on or someone else. We'll talk about the validity of whether this suspension is big or not. But I wanted to touch on it in this podcast since, like I said, I've been having problems getting it up on. But it's up now. And thank you very much for continuing to listen to the show. That's my 2 cents. I think that Brady, I don't want to say anything, take away anything from the guy, because you still got to go out there and perform. But at the end of the day, his first 3 Super Bowls came surrounding Spygate. Yeah, and everybody says, well, it's pretty easy to know where to throw the football if you know where the blitz is coming from. Yeah, that's true. And now this Super Bowl win is also tainted with Deflategate. Yeah, you know, it had nothing to do with them beating the Indianapolis Colts. It had nothing to do really with the Super Bowl. But you look at it, and I look at it anyways, and call me crazy, and I know Patriots fans will have their say against what I'm saying here, but this AFC championship game wasn't the only game in which this happened. I'm pretty certain of that. This wasn't the only time it happened. The report insinuates that there were a couple other, maybe one other game or another, two other games where it might have happened. My question is, if it's happening now, it was happening way before that, and there's some validity. Yeah, the Indianapolis Colts game wasn't close. It was a blowout. They got annihilated. But what about all the other close games throughout the season? They were involved in some tight ones. Maybe it helped out then, folks. That's all I'm saying. Maybe it just helped during some of those close games. That's all the time I got. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Stephen Miranda. You've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm out.